into the sporting spotlight here on Dumb City FM with me, Breffni Early. For the next half hour, my guest is the marathon man, Gary O'Hanlon. Gary, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
I know you're a little bit scared because I just told you there's a quiz in the middle of the programme that you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
But you've got 12 minutes to worry about that, so put that to the back of your mind. I want to rewind the clock a little bit, and I want to go back to the young Gary O'Hanlon and talk about you as a kid, your family, where you grew up, and I suppose how you got into sport originally.
Well, running was the main sport in the family. There was a local running club in Kilkerley Athletic Club. That's where I'm from, just outside Dundalk. And my two sisters ran, and I was basically being dragged up to collect them after training and that, and sort of got hooked in from there, you know. And probably at the age of 14, 15, I started taking it more serious. I broke a Leinster Schools record on the track for 800 metres, and after that I really got into it.
Did it take you actually breaking a Leinster Schools record before you started taking seriously?
Yeah, I absolutely hated it before that. It was like something that you were made to sort of thing. Like, you know, you go up to the club and I'd be more interested in bringing the football with me and kicking around. And then when I sort of started winning things, I got hooked into it then.
So at 14, what other sports did you play? Did you play?
I played everything. Yeah, soccer, Gaelic, everything. Snooker, I was big into snooker. I had a break of 68 when I was 12, so I was big into...
I have never had even a break of half that. I think 32 is my highest break. That's pretty impressive with 12.
At 12, yeah.
Do you ever look at the snooker guys like the Ken Dohertys and the Ronnie O'Sullivans and say, you know, maybe if I'd chosen another path, I could have been going down...
No. I think, I don't think it would have went that way. I think it was a time of Taylor and Davis and all that there. There was more celebrities in snooker now. I think everybody was bigger into it then than they are now, you know, and I think it was like every other kid at the time.
Yeah, you only seem to hear about snooker now when there's a fixing scandal or something like that. So athletics took hold at about 14 and you made pretty good progress through school years. Breaking Leinster record under 14, what was the next stages, I suppose? I don't want you to go quite past 17 just yet, but talk us through your school days.
Then I went on, I came second in the All-Ireland schools, and then I won the school All-Ireland's the following year, and I was unbeaten for 2 years then at school level.
So everything's going great, you're winning everything, nobody can touch you, and then it was a bit of a disaster. Yeah. 17 years of age, you're involved in an accident.
Yeah, I got hit by a car when I was out running.
How much of that do you remember?
None of it, no. From when I woke up, when I came out of consciousness, you know, just...
Do you remember actually going out for the run or getting ready to go out for the run?
I remember for about an hour beforehand, but after that, no. No recollection from there.
Okay, so talk us through that evening, I suppose. Who were you with? Were you with a group or...?
No, I was out with a friend and he was going on the bike, he was pacing me, and it was just about the week before the World Junior Trials. So it was basically the first six of them went to the World Championships cross country, and I would have been the favourite for that. And I was probably in the best shape of my life at the time. And when the accident happened, that was it. The running was over. At least for the next 5 years. It took me 5 years of clearing up the injuries and all that then, but I never got back into it. It was probably in my mid-30s before I really got back into it again.
I'm quite interested because it's a very harrowing human story, the accident itself. It took you 5 years because you spent some time in a coma.
Yeah, I was unconscious for a long time in that then, and when I came out of that, I wasn't the same. I had a lot of reconstruction. I had like 5 plastic surgery operations alone. But there was a lot of like rehab and stuff like that there to get myself back.
So did you have to learn to read, to write, to walk again?
Not to that extent, no. But I wasn't the same person as I was beforehand.
Okay, so we're talking about a decade, maybe a decade and a half before you really got back into running again.
Yeah.
What did you do over the space of that period? Were you active at all?
I was always trying to get back in that, but not to any sort of level. I'd come back for maybe 4 weeks, but the injuries that I had from the accident would always come back on me and that then, so I could never get back or put string four or five weeks together to actually have a good go at it. So no, I was always sort of 2 steps forward, 3 back, and I was like that till my mid-30s, and then I made a bit of a breakthrough then.
What was the breakthrough? Because I suppose everybody knows someone who's been in an accident. I know my next door neighbour, when I was a child, had a similar accident. He was knocked off a bike. His own father was the first person on the scene and didn't recognise him. He was that badly hurt. And he spent, I think, 2 years in Dunleary in the rehabilitation clinic. Okay. And so people are familiar with these kind of stories, but to come back and make a fantastic recovery, as we're going to hear about in the next half hour or so, particularly the last 18 months on the track and on the roads for you as an athlete have just been phenomenal. And even to look at you here in the studio, you wouldn't have for any reason think that ever you had plastic surgery reconstruction to any part of your. It's quite an impressive feat to have come back from that, to bounce back from that. But I'm interested, what actually was the turning point? At what stage did you come from being just a guy who was struggling to get back to any level of activity to actually where it started to click? What was the key ingredient in that?
I suppose it was, I could have got back a few years earlier, but I was always like this type that thought, okay, I'm enjoying life, you know, just get on with it. And I was probably partying too much and enjoying the fact that I was still alive and, you know, got through what I did and that. And then when I reached sort of 30, 31, I said, it's time to really put the head down and see what I can do in athletic terms. And when I was about 34, 35, I started running personal best that were probably nearly 20 years old. My personal best had been when I was 16. So there was a huge gap until I was 35 and I basically got the hunger back. I felt like I was 16 again.
I have a quote here from you. That was just before, it's actually about a year and a half old, from March last year. I'd lost my running goal, something that had defined me. When you were a kid, I suppose, running was your life. And then, yes, I suppose, for 15 years, it wasn't a part of your life and it comes back in. Mm. How much, I suppose, from a life point of view, how important was it to get that kind of identity back?
Yeah, it was very important. Like, that's what I lived for as a kid. And it's only really when I've got back into it now and to a certain level, I realise what I missed. And, you know, I do have regrets that I didn't try to get back that bit sooner. I know for the years that I did try to get back and I couldn't. But there were years, probably my late 20s, that I could have got back and really had a good go at it. People think, okay, you mature as an athlete and you get better doing longer distance like marathons when you're 38, 39, the age I'm at now. But I don't believe that for a second. I had more talent when I was 16 than I do now by a mile. But it's more, I've hunger now than I have. I took it for granted when I was a kid, but now I realise, like, I don't have the same talent, but I'm willing to work harder now.
In terms of, I suppose, most people's concept of what an athlete is at the age of 32, 33, 34, 35, they're retiring from sport, they're kind of drawn back, maybe not necessarily in long distance running, but in most sports, they're, when they hit the 3-0, they're pulling out of sports, they're thinking more of their life after sport. But for you, it's been the opposite.
Yeah.
What has, I suppose, who are the main influences in terms of actually getting you back into the sport?
I'd say the guy beside me here, Kevin English, is probably the biggest factor now, that told me to have a go at it. You know, he's seen that I had talent in that and really sort of pushed me to run on the roads. Like, I raced on the track at 34, 35, and another friend of mine, Killian Larnigan, who'd be a major influence, would say to me there one day, you know, the times you're running here are some of the fastest time in the world for your age group and that. But I was, you know, saying, okay, that's okay. But Kevin was sort of pushing me to get onto the roads and run road races. And I had absolutely no interest in running road races. I remember doing the Port Tunnel race there about 5 years ago, a 10K, and I was terrible. And I said, I can't run beyond 5K. So Kev said, of course you can, you know. So he entered me for a race. It was the Athlone Three Quarters marathon race. And before this, the most I'd ever run was a half marathon, 13 mile, not even that fast. But he sort of like pushed me into doing it. And I went out and I ran a decent time and I got the hunger then to go on and then I'll do a marathon. And then I was saying, I'll do another one and just stretch from there.
The 2011 marathon, you finished fifth in the Dublin Marathon. And this was in the days when the elite guys were invited.
No, I was the fifth Irishman.
Sorry, fifth Irishman. My apologies on my notes. I do have that down. But the time of 2:26 is pretty quick by anybody's standards. Maybe not the Kenyans and the Ethiopians, but by Irish standards, it's not a million miles away from, say, the qualification for the Olympics. Okay. For 2012, you're probably just a couple of minutes outside, maybe 10 minutes behind Mark Keneally, who qualified for the Olympics, I think, earlier in that summer.
Yeah.
Or was it actually in Dublin he qualified for the Olympics? I think his time was 2:13. But 2:25 or 2:26, very, very quick time for the marathon. What were the feelings kind of coming up to the finish line there? Were you, in your head, were you thinking back to the years that you'd missed off on the roads or on the track, or were you just in the moment?
No, it's just a relief to get to the end, because being a track runner, a shorter distance runner from 1500 to 5k, you know, a marathon is a big step. Like, it's you know, it's a completely different race. I wouldn't say the marathon is more competitive than the track. The track is a lot more competitive than road running. But it's just the distance and the amount of effort or amount of training you have to put into for the marathon is completely different. Yeah. So it was a relief of just getting over the line and getting it finished. I wasn't too concerned about the time.
Okay, the first medal that you collected was early last year at the National Interclubs Cross Country Championships. Yeah. You finished third in that day.
Yeah.
Standing on the podium, getting the medal, I suppose it's always going to be a good feeling, but what, from your point of view, what was the best thing about that?
That was the best feeling. That was the, from a senior point of view, of an athlete, from a kid right till I was senior, that was my biggest achievement. And even till today, it's still my biggest achievement, getting a bronze medal in national cross country. It was a great feeling. It was the hardest that I have ever trained in my life leading up to that race. I remember putting in 8 weeks of 80 miles a week and doing two seriously hard sessions a week. I was training with Mark Christie. Mark was trying to go for the Olympic Games that year. He ran 13:28 for 5K, so I was hooking up with him for sessions twice a week in the lead up to that, and I was definitely in the best shape of my life leading into that. So it was just a great feeling to win a bronze medal in the National Senior Cross Country. I think I was the oldest Irishman ever to do that. So when I won that, then I thought, okay, what's next? But I don't think that opportunity will ever come again. I don't think I could ever train as hard as I did for that again. You know, I think that's the ultimate now, to win a medal at that.
Is that, I suppose, I don't want to talk about regrets on the programme, but in terms of the years that are missed between your two peaks, for the want of a better word, do you look back at that and say, if I'd gone 5-6 years earlier, I could have won 5 or 6 medals at those competitions? Or is the body still there to do that? Or is it?
Yeah, I do think about that, yeah. I do wish I could really go back a few years and have a go at it and see what I could have done. But, I mean, you can't live in the past, and as I always say, age is only a number. You know, I don't really put limits on what you can do. I think, okay, I'm 39 now, but I'm still improving. I run a PB by 3 minutes in the marathon there last week, so I know I can go another 3 minutes, like, next time I go out.
I want to talk to you about the marathon, because there's a whole load of things to go on with the marathon in terms of your own performance, finishing fifth or sixth in the race, the events of the day before we're going to talk about, and also you were the coach to, I'm going to throw a number out that I think I heard, 100 runners?
About between 60 to 80.
Okay, it's not bad. It's pretty impressive. It's probably the most coaches would ever have in any race. But we're going to come back to that in the second half of the show. But first I want to talk about the start of this year, because that's the first time, and I wouldn't be an athletics fan, I would have been involved in other sports, but I would have followed athletics, and I would read, say, the likes of Fit magazine every week. Just I'd browse through and I'd read the articles, and your name just did not seem to be out of that magazine for about 4 or 5 weeks at the start of this year. It was just, every time I opened a page, it was Gary O'Hanlon, it was your face looking back at me, because you just seemed to find a knack for winning marathons. And I'm not talking about 2, I'm not talking about 3, I'm talking about 4, I think then a second place in the 5th marathon, all in the space of about 4 or 6 weeks. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah, I had 6 and 8 weeks, I think it was. Yeah, 6 and 8 weeks.
How does your body recover from that? Never mind winning it, even just taking part in the marathon, going through that, putting that pressure on your body, and then getting up and doing it again 2 weeks later, a week later, 2 weeks later, a week later. How do you manage to do that?
It was never a plan. It just sort of, it happened. I do one, and halfway through the week, I'd hear there's another one on. You know, I think I'll do it. So that was it. There was no sort of set plan. I'm going to run 6 marathons in 8 weeks or that.
Okay, it started in Connemara. Was that the first one?
Yes.
And now I've had the pleasure of attempting the Connemara half marathon. Only the half marathon. Yeah. I did finish the course, but I'm not going to divulge my time on air. But I would imagine you comfortably did the marathon in the time it took me to do the half. But the last 2-3 kilometres of that race are just horrific. That hill, I don't know what it's called, the Hell of the West, I think they call it, is the name of it. It's just horrific. Like, how do you drive yourself to keep going in that situation? When you turn that corner and you're looking across the bridge and all you can see is just this rise into the distance.
Yeah. As I say to all the athletes, I coach, look 80 yards ahead of yourself. Don't look at the ground.
That's still a just climb,
look,
though.
Yeah, just look 80 yards ahead. And I'd say, just keep the head straight and look straight ahead. No, I know, it's a killer of a hill. Oh, Jesus, I still have nightmares thinking about it.
After Connemara came the Great Limerick Run.
Yes.
And second win. At what point did you realise you were maybe on the cusp of something pretty special here? Was it in Connemara, or was
I think it was about 8 miles into it, and there's a guy from Waterford, he's a Lithuanian guy from Waterford that ran it, and he's run around 2:24, and he was in it, and I said, this is going to be a tough battle, and I hope I've recovered from Connemara. So about halfway, I started feeling good and I pulled away from him. So after that, I think if I can handle him after running a marathon in such a short space of time, I think I'd be fit for the next one. That's the way I thought.
Is it sensible to do what you did?
No.
Okay, would you recommend it to one of your
athletes? No, I wouldn't recommend it, no. But I'm in such a situation that I coach that many people and that I don't get time to train myself. So I would take this as an opportunity to get out there and doing a long run. So I look at it that way.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The third one up, the Curra, the Run Kildare event in the Curra.
Yeah.
And again, 3 out of 3, hat trick. No stopping you at this stage.
Yeah. Well, on the starting line, I had a look and seen what the opposition was, and I said, I have this one in the bag. So I wasn't too worried about that one. That was all right. So I rested up for that one.
Yeah, you were a good maybe 2 minutes almost clear of second place, and another probably 8 clear. Yeah.
There were some marathons I was getting away with doing like a 70% effort, and that was one of them.
Yeah, because 2:33 is what you finished that day,
and
that wouldn't be particularly quick by your own standards.
No.
It's a good couple of minutes.
Yeah, good steady hard run.
Okay, the next one then was Newry again.
Newry.
A slowish time, although a little bit tighter.
Yeah, that came down to a last lap. A last mile, and it was like a 4:35 last mile. So that was a fast last mile, and that was it. It was steady running up to that point, and I had a race on the following week, which was the Cork City Marathon.
Yeah,
and if I'd have won that,
well, you had a bit more recovery. That was on the Monday, so you had an extra day or two.
Yeah,
so
an extra day. Yeah, but that was a tough one, and that was like I was going for 5 in a row if I'd have won that. So that was the
real
tough
one. Is there
a
record?
I haven't looked into it. No.
So like obviously, and would there have to be at a certain level? Like because obviously you know yourself when you said you looked around the thing and you knew that you had the race won before it started. You knew you're the best athlete there. Obviously, when you come to an event like Dublin or maybe I know you've done Rotterdam as well, you look around and you're saying okay, there's quality here throughout. Mm. In your head, do you rank the different marathons at different levels?
Yes, I would, yeah. Cork and Dublin would be the two biggest ones. So, yeah, and when I went down to Cork, I still thought I'd win it, but I made the silly mistake of doing a hard session a couple of days before it.
Because
I thought I had it in the bag. I really did think I was going to win it. But then there was a Polish champion came over, and he was a 2:17 marathon runner, and I knew it was going to be a tough day then.
Okay. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to put a couple of questions to you, right?
Okay.
You're not that confident, you said beforehand, about the sports knowledge.
No.
I think you can't do as bad as some of the guests.
Right.
Okay? So one is the score to beat.
Okay.
To not be the bottom.
Okay.
So if you get 2, you're not bottom.
Try my best. Okay.
8 is the top, and that's shared by your marathon colleagues, I suppose, Mark Keneally and Sonia Sullivan. I'm sure she's done marathons in her time as well. So it's a minute. Answer as many questions. If you don't know it, say pass, and we'll move on to the next question.
Okay.
Okay? Here goes.
The game begins in 3, 2, 1.
Which jockey secured his 4,000th winner this week? No help from Kevin. Move on from that. Not giving that one. Which Irish player will captain Ireland against Samoa in the rugby union tomorrow? If you don't know the answer, just say pass.
Pass.
Which Ireland Olympic athlete won a World Cup medal last weekend? I'll give you a clue with cycling.
Pass.
Martin Irvine. Which Irish cricketer holds the record for the fastest one-day century in World Cup cricket?
Pass.
Which Clare teenager scored a hat-trick of goals in the All-Ireland hurling final replay?
Pass.
Which Irish triathlete won his debut half Ironman this year in Selim Zee, Austria?
Gavin Noble.
Yep. Who is the top scorer across both divisions of the Air Dressing League this season?
Pass.
Which major cycling event passes through Ireland next year?
Tour de France.
Nope, it's the Giro d'Italia.
Oh, Jesus. No.
The good thing is you're level with Gavin Noble, who is the only answer you got.
Okay.
So, yeah, unfortunately, 1 is the final score there. Not the most impressive, but at least you can run. It's not the end of the world. 1 is the final score there. But unlucky, Gary, unlucky. Let's bring it forward and we talk about the marathon this year.
Okay.
Because that to me is probably the story of the last couple of weeks. Because you work with Amphibian King, one of your sponsors, and in the shop in Ashtown. And you were working at the expo, as most people involved in the sport of running would have had some role on the Saturday and Sunday before the marathon. It's a big fair. It's in the RDS for those who haven't been to it. And everybody comes in and they exhibit kind of their products and people can come in and buy them or whatever they want. So you were working and what happened to you?
I got my phone stolen. I put it down for 2 seconds. I was just lifting a box, helping Kevin there. And next thing I looked around, the phone was gone.
Okay. So obviously most people, the first thing they do is they try and ring the phone, see if anybody answers. So I assume that's what you did.
Yeah, so I rung off Kev's phone there and the phone rang twice and just hung up or, you know, tried a couple of times. And I knew that somebody had it. I knew it wasn't around. We turned down the music and the system that we were at and there was no sign of it. So I said the phone was stolen and I contacted the security guys and they said, well, we'll look into it. And they made an announcement on the intercom and that and it wasn't handed in. So I knew that it was stolen. And next thing I got a text back on the phone saying that it's a good phone. I'll give it back to you if you give me €200. Meet you at Dolphin's Barn. So these texts were going forward and back and he wasn't taking a call. And eventually he did take a call. And I said, I'm not going to Dolphin's Barn. I'll meet you at O'Connell Bridge.
Because the reality is, it's not the phone that's the sentimental value. It's the numbers, it's the text messages, it's the emails, whatever might be on it.
Yeah, it was the people that I was coaching. That was the main thing. Like I had to talk them through their race the following day. So there's people I coach in Dunboyne Running Club and Star of the Sea Running Club and I coach a lot of people one-to-one. So they were the people that I needed to ring, make sure everything was okay in the lead up to the race and that. So that was my main concern, was getting the phone back for them just to give them a call, reassure them and that. So there was a lot more than just the value of the phone. It was a Samsung 3G phone or that. It was a valuable phone, but more importantly it was the people that I had to ring that day to contact them, to
Okay, so you reported to the guards?
Reported to the guards, yeah.
And what did they tell you?
So they arrived down and they said that they were going to dress up. They said to me, were you chatting to him long? Like, have you told him what you're going to be wearing when you're going to meet him? And I said, yes. I was going to be wearing a black hooded top, which I have on me here. And they said, okay, give us one of those. We'll go up and we'll do the swap and arrest him. And then they said, no, actually, you go up. So they changed at the last minute and said, no, you go up. Switch the phone with the money, what he's looking for it, and then we'll arrest. So I said, okay. But I really needed the phone. That was the most important thing. So we went up to O'Connell Bridge and the guy was giving me directions on the phone, telling me take a left, take a right. So I came up by O'Connell Bridge. He told me to take a left and go on down by the taxi rank. So I walked on down and there was three guys there. And he said to me, okay, where's the money? I said, where's the phone? So just as he's about to give me the phone, the two guards come running across the road and the guys threw the phone into the river. So that was that. No phone, no. And
so the, I suppose about laying blame, but the cops didn't help you in that instance.
Well, I don't know, maybe they thought they'd get them before it was thrown. It's supposed to be a thing that they do, that they throw the phone in the river. That's why they would meet you at that point.
So
don't have stolen property on them. Maybe that's the reason for that. I don't know.
Okay, that's unfortunate. So, but at the same time, you still took part in the marathon the following day and somehow, miraculously, you finished. And there was a bit of an altercation and you broke your hand, I believe.
Yeah, I've fractured my hand, yeah.
That's unfortunate. You took part in the race the following day and I suppose with a broken hand is you still managed to come sixth in the race?
Sixth, yeah. It wasn't a position I was looking for. I thought I'd be further up now. I was hoping for top three. Like, I was in good shape going into it, but it was just the whole annoyance of the whole day.
Though,
this was going on from 2 o'clock that day to 8 o'clock that night, and I hadn't eaten or hadn't drank all day. You know, it wasn't ideal preparation. Usually you'd be sitting up with your feet up and drinking and eating and resting up, but this was just, it was the last thing I was thinking about. All I needed was my phone to get it back, so that was it. It wasn't ideal.
You mentioned that you feel you're getting stronger, you're getting better all the time, despite being 39 years of age. What's in store in the next 12 months for you?
Just to improve my times and just try and win as many races as I can. So,
will you be taking on, I was going to say a bigger coaching role, but 60 to 80 athletes is still pretty significant. But is that a side of the sport you want to get into?
Yeah, that's more in my line now. Even that's taken over from my own running is the coaching side of it. So I'm more enthusiastic about that now. And I mean, the rewards of getting people to run PBs, like, surpasses sometimes your own, getting a PB for yourself, you know. So it was great. I got like 100% success rate at every people I coached. for the marathon, they ran a PB, so it was great. So it ranged between 10 minutes to 23 minutes of PBs. And one guy in particular took his PB from 3 hours 46 minutes down to 2 minutes 58. So a guy called Anthony Flannery, so that was the biggest achievement now.
That's pretty impressive stuff. Mm. Maybe you could get me running a marathon in less than a couple of hours. We won't, again, I won't tell you a marathon time either. It's not for a public broadcast. We do allow our guest to finish the show by selecting the music that plays us out. Now, what have you picked for us?
We'll go for Wuthering Heights, Kate Bush.
It's a different choice. Mm. It's a slightly... not what I had expected, but a good tune nonetheless. So listen, Gary, thank you very much for coming in to us. I'm very sorry that the marathon didn't pan out the way it you hoped it would, but I think the success you've had over the last 18 months to 2 years in particular has been fantastic and well-deserved, and may you continue to grow into results, and maybe next year we might see you on that podium at the Dublin Marathon. You never know. You can listen back to this show on www.sportingspotlight.com. This one and all the other episodes in the series. I've been Breffin Early. My guest this week was the marathon man, Gary O'Hanlon, ably assisted by Kevin English, who tried to help him with a couple of the questions, which I wouldn't allow. But lads, thank you very much for coming into the studio. And I'll be back again next week. We're going to finish the show with Gary's choice of music, and it's Kate Bush with Wuthering Heights. Possess you.